This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Lovely day, nice overcast. Got some rain here on Honolulu and expecting some heavier rain. So anyway, I'm going to be discussing with a couple of people, and if we work this thing out, we do have Irene Bowie on the line from Maui tomorrow. And we're going to discuss the Hawaii Super Ferry. And I have been silent on the Super Ferry while reeling on the rail, I should say. But for good reasons. The EIS, similar to the rail, was not published. We didn't have all the facts, but we knew that there's a lot of politics, and we've seen various stories about we're complaining about the people in Kauai not wanting to come into the new age of transportation, and we claim that they were wrong. We have all kinds of things. We say the people on Maui just against development and whatever. But we're beyond that now. And so what this morning and in coming shows, we're going to discuss, hopefully in detail, about this thing called the Super Ferry. We need all types of transportation in the state of Hawaii, and that's a given, and we all benefit, but at what cost? So a lot of you out there think that we should have this ferry no matter what, and others think we shouldn't have it. So do we throw the baby out with the bathwater when we put in the ferry and ignore all the environmental rules? But anyway, I'm also expecting a call from Kuhan Pike. She is the co-author of the Super Ferry Chronicles. And folks, I suggest that you run out and get a copy of this book. You will be thoroughly informed, and there are many eye-openers, and we'll talk, hopefully, if things work out today, on this specifically. But if not, we'll have her back in next week or in the very near future. Anyway, Irene, good morning. Are you there?
Good morning, Carol.
Aloha, and thank you for joining us. And again, as I said to you yesterday, I really appreciate you coming up with this state auditor's report.
Right. The state auditor's report is, it's actually a two-part report. The first part came out in April of 2008, and then the second part was just released December 17th, I believe it was. So, and the second part really has so much information in it that I would really recommend it to anybody that has been following the story of Hawaii Super Ferry and has questions about how a lot of things came into place and how Hawaii's environmental law was really kind of ignored and adapted for one private business.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, thanks to you for suggesting Kuhan Pike, because I had no knowledge of this book, the Super Ferry Chronicles. But again, thank you, and thank you. This is an eye-opener. In my line of work, I'm always aware of these types of things occurring. But what I'm finding out is, and that auditor's report that you have, and we're going to actually post this auditor's report online or at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. And I think everybody should read that that report, and also this Super Ferry Chronicles. It's an excellent book. I haven't had a chance to read it thoroughly, but we'll talk, and there are some things in there that really reveals a lot of activities. But we have Kuhan as well has joined us, Irene. Kuhan, okay. Good morning.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, ma'am. How are you? Aloha.
Aloha. You know, I'm sorry I'm at the airport right now. I'm on my way to the Big Island. We're doing a book tour, which is going to end up in Honolulu at the end of next weekend. So if you hear the guy talking about the loading zone, I apologize.
Now, you're not at the Super Ferry dock in Kauai, are you?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
You're not boarding the Super Ferry there from...
No.
Okay.
I was one of the people at the pier telling them that they needed to get an EIS before they came, so I don't think I would be boarding.
Well, good. I've mentioned the Super Ferry Chronicles, your book that you co-authored, and at the last minute last night, I picked it up at Native Books there at Ward Warehouse.
Oh, great. Thanks so much. How did you like it, or did you get a chance to look at it yet?
Well, I'll tell you. You know, when you read books and you see things, you want to be careful and cautious that you don't jump to conclusion and take that for face value. So last night, this morning, about 2:30, I'm up and I'm doing some research, and I got to say to you, the information you have in there is accurate. And you and others did your homework. For example...
Well, you know, we certainly didn't want to get sued, and, you know, of course, this is such a hot issue in Hawaii. The last thing we want to do is put a big bullseye on ourselves by coming out with a book that's so iconoclastic in Oahu, which is the most populated island.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely, thank you for noticing, we definitely wanted, you know, to make sure that we were bulletproof in terms of litigation.
Well, and I'm going to try to make some sense of this, but and I'll shut up and let you folks talk, but one of the things...
Is Irene Boyan, by the way?
Good morning, Kuhan.
Yes,
hi.
Yes, she is.
I'm greatly honored to be with Irene. I think she's a brilliant individual who's just sustained from the very beginning in terms of, you know, keeping her eye on the prize on this Super Ferry thing.
Well, thank you. I think it's really been a group effort. You know, so many people that have had concerns from the very beginning of this and have really wanted to follow it through to a satisfactory conclusion and have some kind of resolve that the environment will not continue to be put in risk while this boat operates without a proper environmental impact statement.
Right. I do feel like Maui and Kauai have been like a tag team on this, and hopefully we're about to go into the Big Island now and try to get them involved, because it really is so much of an issue about the values of the neighbor islands, which are islands that depend on a rural agricultural economy for their survival versus a global economy, which is what Oahu is locked into. So it's been very hard with the most populated island. You know, population counts for so much, and it's been really hard to get any kind of credibility with Oahu. And so we're really grateful, Carol, that, you know, you're willing to have us on the show, because we're only, you know, we're such a fraction of the population, all of the outer islands put together, or I should say the neighbor islands, rather than use such an Oahu-centric term.
Mm-hmm.
But we are... We're the people that live here, and we're the people that get highly affected by this development, which is just a tiny bit of impact on Oahu compared to the massive impact on the neighbor islands. But anyway, I'm sorry, Carol, you were going to say something?
That's okay, and feel free to jump in anytime. But one of the points regarding this book of yours, the Super Ferry Chronicles, I sat and I, you know, I wanted to look at a few things to confirm and not second-guessing you folk, but what you did was an awesome job on connecting. There was one comment you mentioned that this was all related to the military or had some military, the ferry itself. So I went back and looked at all of the officers in the Hawaii Super Ferry Company, or Inc., and what I found was, as you mentioned in the book, and I didn't look at your book first, I did this reversed, and I found that J.F. Lehman and Company, of that board that is on the Super Ferry Inc., seven or more are actually from the Lehman Company, who is simply an industrial government on military weaponry and what have you?
Yes. So can, I mean, big can, time. The people that really make the decisions for our military are the board members of J.F. Lehman, who is the, which is the majority shareholder, practically the owner, you know, in full, mm-hmm. of the Hawaii Super Ferry Company.
And very heavy hitters. I see Mr. Lehman was the former Secretary of Navy.
Yes, under Reagan, as well as an advisor to Kissinger under Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very influential in the Pentagon.
Yeah, that's very strange that you'd have seven, I think, seven of them on board. And they represented, as your book pointed out, that these were local boys coming to just do business. When in fact, if the board is stacked and it's all military-minded people.
Well, yes, you know, the question remains, I mean, to us it's very glaring, if the state and the governor really cared about an alternative mode of transportation, why not consult the community? Why not take the community's testimonies into consideration instead of ignoring them?
Mm-hmm.
Why not think about the whales? Why not think about the environment which the community is dependent upon? Why not consult many different types of ferry companies?
Mm-hmm.
Why go only to one super a company, J.F. Lehman, who involves itself only with military projects?
Right.
That's on the east coast of the United States, that's connected to the Pentagon. Why go to that company and not consider all the other local community possibilities for running mm-hmm. an alternative ferry service that would serve the community?
Right.
That is the first thing that piqued our suspicion.
Right.
And another thing about the military connection and the EIS that I think is very dubious is that they indicate that there is no military connection. That's
mm-hmm.
what the draft EIS states. But if you look at the initial application that the Hawaii Super Ferry Company filed with the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, in order to get its permit to operate, they clearly talk about transporting Stryker tanks. And even in interviews with the Pacific Business News, J.F. Lehman himself boasts about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand why they think they can get away, or whoever's putting it in that there's no military connection in the EIS, Don
right.
Collins or whoever, don't they know that the information's already out there, that Super Ferry themselves has talked about military connection?
If I could break in this, I would kind of like to just preface Maui's tomorrow's participation in the program today as saying we are really in an appeal before the state Supreme Court for the constitutionality of Act Two. We have not weighed in some of the theories
mm-hmm.
About the whole conception of Hawaii Super Ferry's operation, but rather going back to Chapter 343 of Hawaii's environmental law and the mm-hmm. fact that an environmental review and an environmental impact statement should be done prior to operation. That has really been the heart of our litigation throughout this long process. We really feel, and we think that the state auditor's report has verified this, that it has been special legislation for one company, that that this was allowed to begin operations while an environmental impact statement is being prepared. That's completely against Chapter 343,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's on appeal before the Supreme Court. We had oral arguments before the court on December 18th, and we're awaiting their decision any time. We hope that it could possibly come sometime in January. We don't really know. But that's what Maui Tomorrow and Sierra Club and Kahului Harbor Coalition are looking for in this, is to go back and have an environmental impact statement done, because we feel that the environment has been in harm
mm-hmm.
while the operation has been going. To find things as you're in process removes the opportunity to mitigate and alleviate problems that could cause irreparable harm. So things like the impact on humpback whales, the spread of invasive species, the taking of natural and cultural resources, these are things that we've found through the course of the year's operation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I would say in the Honolulu Advertiser, story that was in the paper this week after the release of the draft EIS, the Hawaii Super Ferry was quoted as saying that their commitment to responsible operations and environmental awareness, we remain committed to working with the state to address the impacts. It's not so. You look back in the state auditor's report, and Hawaii Super Ferry never even agreed to comment and give any information to the state auditor as she was processing this report for a year. So I just find those statements very hollow. There are things like the mitigation measures that they have in here supposedly to protect the humpback whales that are not valid. And it's been a frustrating year to go through this because I've attended most of the meetings of the oversight task force that was created through the year. Now, they've sunsetted. They will no longer be in operation, but some of the mitigation measures where they say they have special technology that can help to spot whales, the thermal imaging, these are things that are not proven. They are not proven in Hawaii waters, and to see that as a mitigation that's put in place, it's just been a very long and frustrating process.
Well, we're going to jump around on this, but speaking of the audit, Irene, I read it, and it talked about $38 million. Can you explain to the listeners out there what that entails
was really, the whole fiasco of the barge system that was put in place. If you look through the auditor's report, you'll find that this goes back to 2004 when discussions first began, that staff in the Department of Transportation, the State Department of Transportation, had asked that onward ramps be installed in the boat because the system of barges was going to be impractical, it was going to be expensive. This was ignored and these barges were put in place, and that's really where that figure comes from, the cost of putting these barges in. And anybody who's followed the story has seen what a problem that's been in Kahului Harbor here on Maui.
Mm-hmm.
As the Army Corps of Engineers and the staff at the Department of Transportation knew, any kind of a north-facing harbor was going to create a real problem for barge systems.
Uh-huh.
So not only is this a problem here in Kahului, but it will be in Kauaihai Harbor unless they bring the second ship, which now they say they're installing ramps on this. But that was also one of the things that triggered the EIS, because
right.
You have to look not only at the impact there in the harbor with what you're doing, but the secondary and the cumulative impact.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does take into account invasive species, humpback whales, the transit between the islands, so many things, even the impact on other facilities there at the harbor area,
right.
Things like that. Now, the barge system, as the state auditor says, because the second boat that has been built now by Hawaii Super Ferry, although they haven't brought it over here, they say that they're waiting, for the economic climate to improve, but that one has ramps installed on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they begin using that boat, and maybe they go back in with Alakai and at some point put an onboard ramp on that, the barges are obsolete, and that $40 million has been spent for nothing, because there's nothing else you can do with these barges because of the Jones Act. They were built in China. They can't be used by anybody else here. They can't be modified. And even to me, the most stunning
mm-hmm.
part of that little saga was the fact that the barge in Kahului Harbor is the largest of the barges that Super Ferry built for harbors, and it has to be hauled out for a dry dock at least once every 3 years, and there's no facility,
right.
dry docking facility in the state of Hawaii that can
right.
haul that barge out.
Yeah.
So you would either have to take that thing to the mainland or haul it out at Pearl Harbor for the naval shipyard, which would then create much more cost. And that was one of the other things in this. When the Oversight Task Force turned in their final report that will go before the legislature, they had a list of costs in there. Well, this was discussed at these task force meetings. That list looks like it's a final cost list, and it's not at all. There are many, many other costs that should be included onto that, and I was told by the Harbors Division that they were just awaiting invoices to come in,
mm-hmm.
that they would have a final list at some point. But as you look at, their final report presents that list as a total cost, and
yeah.
it is not.
Yeah. Well, Kuhan, this is
yeah.
Speaking of state auditor and the state's role, Your book, The Super Ferry Chronicles, mentions the role of Governor Lingle and a few other state legislative government officials. Can you...
Wait, hold on, Cheryl. You're speaking right as the guy's announcing security.
Okay, well, no problem.
Getting into the airport. Can you repeat that, please?
What role did Governor Lingle... Your book talks about Governor Lingle and other state officials involved. What role would you say in your book you describe her role as being? Did she interfere, intervene, wrong or right? What do you...
Her role in all of this?
Yeah, and let's try to keep them kind of brief.
Well, we do have a subheading where we call her the villain of the piece.
Okay.
And what we mean by that is that at every turn, she did what she could to accommodate this one company. And, you know, I didn't get pulled into this whole Super Ferry fiasco until pretty late in the game. I was actually for the ferry at first because I wasn't educated about the ferry. But as I learned how fast it would be, and I learned about the relationship between speed of boats and whales, when I learned about invasive species, I mean, I take for granted that Kauai has no mongoose and we have this incredibly diversity of bird life here. But when I heard that all that was gravely threatened, and my friends are farmers and the fire ants, and that I all heard after quite a while. We went to the pier, and I've got a story about that very famous clip that everybody's seen of the people beating on the SUV, which is extremely misleading. What actually happened was that there were peaceful protesters lying down in front of the tires of that SUV, and the driver didn't see them, and so the people were beating to save these people's lives, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, regarding Lingle, is that when I saw this incredible arrogance when she came to talk to us on Kauai and let us know that she was putting into place Homeland Security Act terrorism laws that would deem us terrorists for basically defending the Supreme Court's decision that an EIS was required first.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was such flagrant disregard for the law, and she was putting herself and Super Ferry Company above the law, and it's been like that all the way through. We do see her as the villain of the piece, and that's how I got involved. And it was the environment, it was standing up for the democratic process, and just doing what's right, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, both of you, the EIS is out now. Where do people write to? Do you have that information, and what is the deadline?
It's a 45-day period.
February 23rd.
Comments, and you would write to the director of the Office of Environmental Quality Control.
Mm-hmm.
You can also write to the deputy director at the Department of Transportation, Harbors Division. And those addresses you can find in the advertiser story that was from Friday, January 9th, or you can go on either website, and I'm sure you can find that. Again, for the plaintiffs in this case, we do not even recognize this draft IES. We feel that it's an illegitimate process, and so we're really hoping, again, that we have a favorable decision from the courts and can begin the process again with a true EIS.
Okay.
And I would go far back to say, again, something that's been a misconception all along is that the plaintiffs are against a ferry system, and that never was the case. I think most of us have traveled in other countries and in other areas of the United States where there's ferry systems, and we all agree ferry systems can be a great form of transportation, but mm-hmm. it's the process and the fact that this was a fast ferry, and that's something that is classified with the Department of Transportation. A fast ferry goes these speeds that are much faster than a barge, than Matson, mm-hmm. and Young Brothers, than the cruise ships. This is going much faster, and so it puts it in another category that could create harm. And I would also say that in other parts of the country and in other parts of the world, fast ferry systems have been tried out and have been taken out of service because of the problems that they cause. So that, in the beginning, when we heard that this was coming, was the main cause of alarm, that it was certainly something to to be considered, but that would need to go through an environmental review to look at ways to handle the fact that it was going to have cars
right.
on and off. It would need some kind of a real system to make sure that the undercarriage and the wheels were free of mud that could transport invasive species. The issue of the humpback whales being protected, a federally protected species, and particularly the waters around Maui County being the sanctuary waters, the fact that this vessel could travel through those waters at great speed created a lot of, you know, concern, and still does.
Well, let me stop for a minute.
Can I say something?
Wait, one second. Just we got enough time, so let me. I just feel as though we're trying to rush our answers or comments. You'll have time. Let me just share with you one point that Irene's effort. Is that lawsuit that you have?
Right.
It's awesome. At least the books, and I think what you guys have done is absolutely. It cuts through the sound bites and what the media attention the super fairy has gotten without you guys being present. So, Kuhan, go ahead and what were you going to say?
What was I going to say? Oh, I came in late, but I don't know if Irene mentioned that the worry of plunder is also a huge concern on the neighbor islands. Now, we don't blame Oahu people as being thieves. That seems to be taken the wrong way, but we are concerned that in August 2007, for over 400 pounds of reef fish were taken from the reefs of Maui by people who were on the super ferry. And when the local Kauai fishermen heard that, and they are not politically active people, they go out and they fish, and that's how they support their families. I mean, this is our economy here. When they found that out, they became... We had more another demographic that was concerned about super ferry and did not want super ferry to come here because... We neighbor islands cannot afford to lose those natural resources, over 400 pounds of reef fish in one month.
And this is one example of unresolved issues in the draft EIS. There is no commitment by the state to funding any kind of staffing of Department of Agriculture and DOCARE officers. Maui was fortunate through this year of operations that there were our DOCARE, Maui's DOCARE officers at the harbor most of the time that could do inspections. And these are people that have been trained. They're professionals. They know what to look for. And the answer always was that the Hawaii Super Ferry staff could take over this, that it was an expense that the state wasn't willing to fund, which, again, I just find that unbelievable. If we're saying that this operation is so important to the state, then it warrants some safety net on it and some controls, and it certainly warrants the funding of officers to be there to inspect and take things, and also the fact that people would know that these inspections would be taking place would probably lead to less taking of those resources.
Let me ask.
Went to another.
Let me ask the two of you. I've had this ask of me. We're saying that they need to wash the undercarriage of the cars and all. Is the undercarriage on cars washed at Young Brothers on the barges?
No, and the argument on that always was most of the cars, for one thing, if you're taking your car on Young Brothers, you are asked to wash your car, and they do take a look at it before they will take it for shipping. Mm-hmm. But the very nature of a ferry is that you jump on, you go to the other island, you get out, you do whatever recreational things you're going to do, and you come back again. It's so much more likely, and the volume of cars on a daily basis is so much greater going in and out. Now, one of the things that Belt Collins, who did the draft EIS, found early on in their rapid risk assessment was that an undercarriage pressure wash system would have resolved that issue. But because this thing was always already in operation, there was no room anywhere to put it in. So it became a thing of, it would have been better if we had this, but we don't have it.
So that's an excellent example of why people do their EIS before starting operation.
Exactly. That could have been something that could have been looked at. It would have been known that it was needed, and it would have been built into the operation. So again, I think maybe all of us could have been very happy with the opening of Hawaii Super Ferry if it had been done, in the proper process, and these things were, the safeguards were in. It would be great, if we knew. I mean, on the issue again of the humpback whales, built into not only the executive order that came from the governor, but all throughout these documents, it says that it will avoid humpback whale sanctuary waters in the winter months if it's all right for passenger comfort and safety. Now, safety maybe would be one thing, but passenger comfort, in the winter months, most of the time, it's a fairly rough ride. And so that's such a vague kind of a mitigation to be put in there. So, in other words, any day they can come through sanctuary waters going 25 knots, which is extremely fast. NOAA and the Department of Natural Land and Natural Resources asks other boaters to slow to 10 knots in the winter months when the whales are here.
Yeah. Why do you think Governor Lingle intervened as she did? And reading the book and reading other information, why do the two of you think that Governor Lingle went to such, took such measures to...
Again, I would state as plaintiffs in this case, I can't speculate on that. I don't know. All I know is the facts before us, that this is what happened, and this is why we feel that our law has been compromised, and why we've taken, the time, effort, and energy to go back through this legal process to try to have it justified. So I would really have to leave any speculation on that.
Well, I can speculate. Governor Lingle dazzling us with her introduction of Sarah Palin at the Republican National Convention last year. It's no coincidence that John F. Lehman, the owner of the Super Ferry, who she was pandering to, basically, was announced by the New York Times that had John McCain been elected president, John Lehman would have been appointed the National Security Advisor for the United States, for the President. So clearly, I mean, my speculation is that her accommodating Super Ferry, bending over backwards, dealing with all this grief from all the people of Hawaii, from her constituency, had everything to do with her career climbing. And she almost made it. She was so close, but Barack Obama just stepped in and took that away from her. So it was kind of, I chuckled to myself when she refused to go to the governor's meeting, because I felt it was like an intense case of sour grapes after this huge Super Ferry affair.
So, I understand the caution that Irene has to display, but and in this effort, exempting a company from the EIS set precedents, and do you believe that this is going to pose a threat to future developments or other companies wanting to come in? Set a legal precedent?
Well, yeah, I think it sets a bad precedent. Absolutely. I mean, when Act 2 was created, they were crafty enough maybe to say it was for a large capacity ferry vessel rather than that it was for Hawaii Super Ferry. But again, if you go back to the state auditor's report, it states that because the time frame of this was such a short time frame, there never really was an ability for any other large capacity ferry vessel company to come over here and play.
Also, I don't believe there is a ferry this large in existence. From what I've heard from Brad Parsons' reports, he's a blogger on the subject, and I believe this is the only commercial passenger ferry of this size. So just through the nature of what is in existence, there are no other companies that could be included in this EIS.
So this exemption, I was trying to figure out and read last night, what are the exemptions that she assigned to this? Are they clearly stated?
Well, the exemption, basically, I mean, you know, the executive order, you know, has a few different parts to it, but basically, if that, it could begin operations during the environmental review. Mm-hmm. That's really it in a nutshell. Instead of saying, you need to wait, we need to go through the environmental process, mm-hmm. and then you can, you know, once the mitigation measures are in place, you could begin operations. It did the reverse, so that all this has been going on for the year. You know, I think their take on this, that, and this was also in the advertiser article of Friday, that the draft environmental impact statement says that it will have significant impacts on endangered humpback whales, cultural practices, traffic, and the spread of invasive species, but also provide a valuable transportation option for people, vehicles, cargo, that enhances the state's disaster relief system. Now, I will say, last December, Maui had a very, very big storm, and it did a lot of damage up in the Kula area of the island, and National Guard were able to board the ferry and come over. Again, this might be something that would be a good thing for the state had it been done in the proper way. If all the mitigation measures were in place, maybe we would have decided that, you know, this was one more option for us that was a good thing. But I go back to this all along. It was sort of the cart before the horse. I never heard back in 2004, 2005, the people of Hawaii demanding an inter-island ferry service. It was that this was created, and people said, wow, that sounds like a good idea. So there was never a rush for it. We mm-hmm. didn't need it immediately. We could have gone through the process, abided by our laws, and probably had this come about, you know, in the end run. Probably by now it would have happened.
Well, let me ask.
But then yet in the papers, we kept reading about the rush all the time, and the only people that were responsible for this rush was Hawaii Super Ferry, saying that their investors would pull out if they didn't meet these deadlines.
And that's a very good point, because that is also in the state auditor's report, that the deadline was actually a false deadline. The public was told, and Super Ferry purported, that this was from the Department of Transportation's Maritime Administration. To get funding from them, they had to make a certain deadline. That was not the case. It was the boat builder, Austal Marine, that had a deadline that they needed to know that the monies were in place from Hawaii Super Ferry before they would commit to building the boat. So that was absolutely a false pretense that timeline was based on MARAD. It never was.
And that timeline was presented by
by Hawaii Super Ferry to the state.
Why did the governor and others allow that to be represented to the public? Why? That was so false.
You know, I think you'd have to go back to the state auditor. She and her department had such a tough time getting the information. The complete auditor's report was supposed to be presented back in the spring of 2008. It was mm-hmm. supposed to be presented in March, and she was only able to present half her report in April, and then, as I said earlier, the second half in December. And in this, I will tell you, even to the point where it is stated in the first chapter of the second part of the auditor's report, mm-hmm. delays resulting from an extensive and intrusive review by the Attorney General of our audit work compelled us to issue the report in two parts. So there, you know, I can't tell you why, but I can tell you that there was an unwillingness to come forward with information.
That very point, when I read that, that's why when I picked up this book, The Super Ferry Chronicle, I start to see a bigger understanding or a better understanding. And let me tell you something. When I read that the Attorney General, the State Attorney General, was interfering and intrusive and disruptive of the auditors' efforts to put some sense to this, that really heightened my interest. And then I see Kuhan and others in this book have actually, Jerry Mander, actually, it's Kuhan Pike and Jerry Mander is the authors of this. So when I read that, Irene and Kuhan, I can't wait to get off air and get back to start reading this, honestly, because
I would recommend to people that they definitely download the state auditor's report and have that as a companion piece. And again, we'll go back to the fact that also stated early on in this report Hawaii Super Ferry never complied, never spoke to the auditor to provide any information. So I think they're very disingenuous when they present a picture of being, you know, open and honest and dedicated to the protection of the environment. I think that was probably low on the list, and I think that had a lot of reasons why they wanted to operate the way they did, because as it is, this trip from Oahu to Maui is over 3 hours.
Right.
And they knew that if they had to do a lot of inspections with vehicles, if they had to slow down, avoid sanctuary waters, it would make it a longer trip, which would be less attractive to passengers. And I would also state that even after a year of operation, the best loads they have are still half capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So even being green-lighted as they have been, it has not been a real successful operation. I think, you know, it's notoriously rough. People get seasick. Last Sunday, they had the damage with the cars and the rough seas that were banging around. Just a lot of things that, you know, it could have been a better operation had they taken more time, involved the public, follow the environmental law.
Right.
We might all be happy with the ferry service and not have so much division between people in the state right now
over
this issue.
Let me, Kuhan, could you share with us your insights and what you found?
Excuse me, can I share with you what?
Yeah, hold on. I hear the noise in the background. Can you hear me? Anyway, the legislators got together and passed Act 2. Can you, your book talks about it, but can you share with us real quickly, and then we're about getting down the time, so briefly, tell us, what do you think and what's your stance on the legislators' role in this?
Well, I'm very confused why the legislators basically passed this through in record speed without challenging it. I'm quite baffled by it. Perhaps Irene has a better answer.
As the process was happening and conversations with various members of the legislature, and I think a lot of them felt that it wasn't a good deal, but it was also a case that the state was going to be sued by Super Ferry for quite a bit of money. There were guarantees made. There were things built into the contract that delays would cost X amount of money to the state, and it by that point it was a real unfortunate deal. And I think the legislature was trying to make lemonade from lemons and went ahead and did this thing. I think the legislature now, with the auditor's report, you know, if this came back before them, I think they'd take a real long, hard look at it, and it would probably be a different outcome.
Hey, Irene, I have a question for you. You know, at one point, Irene put out an excellent roster of all the expenses thus far that have been spent by taxpayers in order to accommodate Super Ferry, including court fees, the barge fixing, tugboat rental, etc. Do you have an estimate or a guesstimate of how much taxpayer money has gone into this so far?
You know, Kuhan, I do not, and I mentioned to Carol earlier, I think before you came on, that that the list of costs that was included in the Oversight Task Force final report and put forward as a final list of costs is really not, that it is a partial list. And we presented it, the piece that you mentioned, I did present to the Oversight Task Force a few months back and was told that they were waiting for invoices still to come in, that they acknowledged that there were more costs to be had. So I don't have a figure on that, but I would like to see that eventually, because
right.
It's much more than that list that you find in the documents.
Well, the reason I asked, besides obvious reasons, is that I was sort of going through and just guessing, and I came to, gosh, possibly over $100 million. If that's so, or let me just lowball it and say $100 million or $80 million. I mean, that's enough money for the state to put together our own ferry service that could be subsidized and that could actually serve our needs as we would design such a ferry rather than having it imported as some ship that is ultimately going to be a prototype, or has been used as a prototype for military ships.
Well, and again, I mean, I think that would take you back to if the discussion for inter-island ferry service had been more practical, that
or if it had been instigated by the people,
that would have been discussed.
Right.
Rather than just one business that was green-lighted.
Right.
Let me ask you, the two of you, Irene, people will be interested in learning more on this. Will the Maui Tomorrow post anything on their website, and how would they?
Our website is www.maui-tomorrowfoundation.org.
Okay, and what they can contact me through there, and those that don't have computers
right,
or internet.
I would give them a phone number of 808-268-0303. That's my number, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone that had questions on this or wanted to look further.
And you will be posting, anything?
We do have posts about the Super Ferry up on the website currently, and we keep those updated. And again, you know, we're anxiously looking forward to the court's decision sometime soon, so that will be back in the news, I'm sure, when that decision comes about.
Yes, and if anybody is curious about the book and our appearances, you can go to www.superferrychronicles.com. We will be in Honolulu on the 18th at Revolution Books and on the 19th at Native Books doing book signings. But the books are at both those bookstores and will be appearing on the Big Island next week as well.
Yeah, and so those of you out there, we're not receiving any payment to promote this, and nor would we accept anything. But I do want to say once again, those of you who say that the people on Kauai are out of their mind and not willing to come along with the program, and those on Maui are being unreasonable, stop for a moment, be level-headed. This book and the efforts that Irene and the others have put together will answer many of the questions that your legislators did not answer or ask. And your governor and her assistants just railroaded this thing through. And anybody that has an opinion, one way or the other, I suggest you read this. I haven't read it thoroughly. But back again, I was going to say we need to do many of things. And back to that Lehman company. Thomas Fargo is working for Lehman. Mr. Lehman himself, Alexander Harmon, George Sawyer, Krekel, T. Krekel, Louis Mintz, Shirley, John W. Shirley, all of those people are on the board of the Hawaii Super Ferry. So what do you think, Kuhan? How do you think this is going to play out? Predicting.
How do I think that the military connection's going to play out, or do I think Super Ferry's
going to
play out?
Right. Just your feelings about this. Now that we have this information out, do you think the public...
Well, I don't know if it was discussed that we believe that John Lehman's interest in this boat is that he has always been interested in building up a 600-ship Navy as part of this new strategy for the 21st century, where it's no longer a Cold War kind of battles, but what they call asymmetrical warfare, where there's what they call terrorists that work basically civilians, such as World Trade Center and also the latest Mumbai, where they came by ship. Also the pirates off Somalia. I mean, this is the nature of warfare now. It's military corporate structures versus people that are feeling like being terrorists for one reason or the other versus nation states fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of warfare that requires fast, smaller armaments rather than huge these aircraft carriers we've been used to having, little fast ships that can go in and out of small harbors. And Super Ferry, John Lehman felt that this would be a very good prototype for this kind of ship. So Austal, that's why Austal was picked as the boat builder, and Austal, who is also an investor in Super Ferry, put out a bid to build these huge contracts. One is for $1.6 billion to build the joint high-speed vessel, and they recently won it. And so my point is that they're succeeding in proving that the Hawaii Super Ferry is seaworthy enough to win these contracts. You see, that the having the ship in the water quickly was very, very good for proving to the Navy and to the Pentagon that they're the ones who should win these billion-dollar contracts. The next contract they're up for is called the Littoral Combat Ship that is worth $50 billion. And so where I think it's going to go is that, as far as layman is concerned in Austell, you know, they got what they wanted out of the deal, was to get the boats in the water as fast as possible, regardless of what the people in Hawaii think, and prove its seaworthiness so that they could get those contracts. Now, as far as on a local level, Hawaii Super Ferry operating, it just seems to me that the economic downturn is certainly not playing in its favor, let alone the sea conditions in wintertime. And basically, I think I'm just waiting to hear what the Supreme Court ruling says, because that is really where the kernel of truth lies, is what the Supreme Court says. Because as far as I'm concerned, this EIS is just a big dog and pony show to keep us distracted from the real issue. However, it's extremely essential for people to read this document or get informed as to what the document says, because it's over 1,100 pages and not everybody has time. It's really hard to read. It's really hard to find on the Internet, and I don't think that's an accident.
Will there be...
You can hook into somebody like Irene Boy and all of the other activists on the Outer Islands, find out what this says, find interpretations that you trust, and write to the Office of Environmental Quality or whatever the name of that place is. That's going to be really important, because in the event, for some reason, that the Supreme Court rules in favor of Super Ferry, we on the Outer Islands still believe that the ferry should not be running. It did not go through proper democratic process, and so we have to approach this on all fronts. So if you are concerned about Hawaii Super Ferry, please respond to the address that Irene Boy has given.
Right. We're going to be out of time here shortly. So real quickly, Irene, do you have any parting words?
Sure. I would just like to end for the plaintiffs in this case, stating that we hope that the state Supreme Court decision allows us to get the real environmental impact statement that we're entitled to under Chapter 343. We're hopeful of that, and time will tell soon enough.
Well, if you would, keep us posted. And
again,
so that people understand, we're not sitting here talking to one another. One of you are on Maui and the other is at an airport at Kauai. So
yeah, I can hardly hear any of you. So
well, no problem. I'm just offering an apology and hoping the public out there will understand that the logistics of this. So we're not talking over one another. But please feel free to come back, and I'm inviting you back because there is just so much information here to be had and needs to be disseminated. And I learned that they will not have public hearings on this matter.
No public hearings. So that's one more part of it. I mean, there's, it just does not follow the true EIS procedure.
Well,
Carol, we both want to thank you for really connecting the archipelago this way, you know, with having someone from there, having someone from Kauai, because it is the separation of us that is really, this divisiveness that this whole Super Ferry fiasco has engendered has been very negative, and we really want to reunite the archipelago.
Well, keep in touch, and if you would, while you're en route, give me a call, and I'd like to coordinate with the two of you again, because there's so much to be discussed, and we were left in the cold on this one, so.
Sounds great. Well, we appreciate it again, Carol. Thank you so much.
All righty.
Thank you, Carol.
Aloha.
Aloha.
So, as you can see, there's so much to be discussed and on the Super Ferry. And if you are interested, and whether you're for or against, but I think you owe it to yourself to really go out and dig. And, folks, I've seen a lot of information, but this is scary. And what our governor would do. And it parallels to, and it appears that our mayor stole some of the game strategies from the governor. Remember, the federal government told him he could release a document and there was a deadline. And it was just absolutely, just unreal what they've done. So anyway, this will be posted up on carolcox.com. Again, the book, and I suggest you go out and get it if you don't have to, but the Super Ferry Chronicles, An Uprising Against Militarism, Commercialism, and Desecration of the Earth. Now, don't go away in thinking that these are people that are not making sense. You owe it to yourself this time. And again, thank you. This is the Carol Cox Show. Please join us next week, and hopefully we'll continue this topic. Aloha.
Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial. This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.